This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The debate over the cleanup of the February coal ash spill continues. Nearly 39,000 tons of potentially toxic waste flowed into the Dan River. The full effects on tourism and agriculture are not entirely known, and environmentalists want big cleanup before another spill occurs. At the same time, a federal investigation continues to examine the relationship between Duke Energy and the Department of Environment and Natural Resources. WUNC's Jeff Tabiri joins us now. He's been covering the story. Welcome back, Jeff.
Hey, Frank. How are you?
Good. So one of the big concerns now are the economic impact, agriculture, and tourism in the area near the Dan River. What are you hearing?
So sediment was found, has been located as far as 70 miles downstream from the spill site. If we want to think about one landmark, it's Danville, Virginia, 22 miles downstream from the spill site in Eden, North Carolina, and all along this river that goes into Virginia and back to North Carolina and kind of, you know, straddles the border between the two states, there are farms. There are corn farms and soybean farms and cattle farms, and there are all kinds of concerns because there are many folks who have their livelihood based around, you know, the property next to the river. And then, of course, there's tourism and there's some activity on the river.
You've talked to some of those farmers, a dairy farmer who works near the river. Tell us about him.
Wayne Fitzpatrick is he's up in Virginia and he has several hundred cattle. He's also a conservationist and, you know, he's worried about this thing both from an agricultural front as well as a leisure front.
Let's hear from him.
Well, upstream of the spill site, we've already had anecdotal reminders that people are canceling their summer cabin reservations and their kayak rentals.
And right. I think just one important note to clarify there, he says upstream. That's not downstream. This is the stretch of river before the spill. So some of this is the public perception, the perceived fear or concern about, oh, what's in that river? Well, what went in went X direction. This is in the other direction. So the fact that even anecdotally there are folks who are canceling cabin reservations is of concern to people who make a living through some of these industries.
Well, and that's it. And tourists see these things as ecosystems. The river is the river and mm-hmm. everything that feeds it. And that's one of the things you have to consider when you make environmental regulations and when you try to enforce them. So here's a farmer who is also worried about the effects on tourism. You also talked with Will Stoddard, did you? NC State Extension Agency.
I did, and he is a field agent. He works in Rockingham and Caswell counties, which are rural counties north of Greensboro, and he works with farmers on a series of issues pertaining to water and soil and pesticides and how to, you know, best properly grow your crops.
Well, let's hear from him.
The biggest concerns that I had were livestock drinking from the river, irrigating with that water, having any kind of contaminants in it, applying it to the land, and also flooding of the river bottoms.
So what's he talking about there?
So that third point is when he says the river bottoms, what he's talking about is the sediment getting kicked up when the river is at a high level, and some of the sediment, which has been concentrated in the river, is settled at the bottom of the river, gets into the floodplain. So now we're dealing with water that's up in these fields, these farmers' fields, they flood all the time. So one of the concerns that he and others have is that some of this coal ash sediment, which is potentially toxic, high in heavy metals such as arsenic and selenium, some of that material gets into the fields where crops are either growing or cows are grazing. And there are plenty of cows along the Dan River that do drink out of the water, drink the water. And as of now, you know, there is some concern about that, but everything seems to be okay at this point.
Right, and they may end up eating the forage that's grown in the floodplain. So all of those concerns. So right now, the question's about even how to classify this waste, right, in terms of its danger and its risk to the public and the environment.
That's a big one, and that really ties in with the long-term cleanup of this whole thing. So the EPA is expected to issue guidelines by December 17th, and part of the crux of what's happening here is Duke has come out and said, we, Duke, are going to clean up coal ash at this site in Eden where the spill occurred. We're going to remove coal ash from two other sites and put it in lined landfills. However, there is a small chance that in those EPA recommendations, small chance, the EPA could possibly say this is hazardous material. And if that's the case, it triggers a whole different set of requirements as to how this stuff has to be stored away, meaning Duke, in theory, Duke Energy, could move millions of tons of coal ash to line landfills, and come December, the EPA could say, yep, it's hazardous, and Duke could have to move it again. Now, again, it's a very slim chance it gets classified as hazardous, but if you're thinking about making an economical decision about how to move this and keeping costs down, and Duke, after all, is a major business, it seems unlikely that any significant coal ash cleanup from coal lagoons or coal dumps is going to happen before the EPA issues these recommendations. And oh, by the way, as for these recommendations, it's entirely possible that the White House could come back and say, okay, thanks for your recommendations. We're going to go in a different direction.
Well, I was going to ask you about the dynamics here. I mean, on the one hand, does Duke say, no, we're not going to do anything yet until we hear from the EPA? So they got to get this stuff out of here. On the other hand, what are the odds that EPA, or as you say, the president says, oh, wait, they already spent a lot of money to move that stuff into one level of containment. We're not going to ask them now to move it into the next level, even though we possibly may have found it hazardous?
So it sounds, from talking to folks with the federal government and also conservationists and environmentalists, it sounds like there's just, again, a really slim chance that this stuff gets classified as hazardous. There are some, you know, places for coal ash to be used. It can be used in cement. There has been some storage of it at the airport in Asheville. There has been talk about storing it at the airport in Charlotte as well. And it's a fair question, but Duke has said it will make steps toward cleanup, but I think some of it is just waiting to see exactly what the recommendations are. Aside from the hazardous, EPA is going to, you know, classify it as X or Y or C. There are going to be a series of different classifications, right, which will kind of give the company some guidelines as to how and in what ways.
And so they can get this underway. So there was a proposed settlement in a state case where environmentalists joined Diener in a lawsuit against Duke Energy. Tell us about that again. Remind us what happened.
A federal lawsuit was filed by the Southern Environmental Law Center for alleged violations of the Clean Water Act. The state had the opportunity to step in and block that suit, which it did. And it moved forward with a settlement with Duke. Diener, Department of Environment and Natural Resources, and Duke had a proposed settlement in place for a $99,000 fine. That proposed settlement, again, over federal and state violations of water contamination, didn't include any stipulations or requirements for coal ash cleanup. Environmentalists and critics called this a sweetheart deal. And after the spill, hours before the federal investigation began, at least publicly, Diener went to a state judge and said, as for that $99,000 proposed settlement, if you would, don't rule on that just yet. We're thinking about moving forward with that proposed settlement. They have since asked the judge to forget about it, and it is, again, an open lawsuit in which Diener has been joined by environmentalists as co-plaintiffs, and they're trying to force Duke's hand or lead to some cleanup of this carbon byproduct that is in unlined holes in the ground that environmentalists say is continually contaminating groundwater.
And obviously, since this lawsuit was already underway, there's been a great deal of concern about this and its containment even before the spill. Now Duke would like the environmentalist to be removed from the lawsuit, right?
Yeah, they want to go back to negotiating with Diener. Diener has not commented on this. Duke has not commented on this. The environmentalists say that it's a little bit hypocritical because Duke has come out. They responded to a letter seeking a detailed plan for cleanup from Governor McCrory, who, of course, worked for Duke for 29 years. So Duke sent that letter back and said, we're going to do this. We're going to be active in cleanup. And the environmentalists say it's just misleading for Duke to say we're going to clean up. And then in this other instance, to kind of lawyer up and not welcome the environmentalists and conservationists to the table and hear what they have to say as part of this whole negotiation.
So there's legal action over the cleanup itself and the mere presence of coal ash and how it should be treated.
A civil
legal action, and now a criminal investigation into the relationship between the regulators and Duke.
Right. And we don't know all that much about it because it's grand jury testimony and it's sealed. We know that at least 23 subpoenas have been issued to Duke Energy, to current and former employees at Diener, as well as the Utility Commission. And one of the questions that I have been asked, that I also have been asking, is, will there be another round of subpoenas? Is it possible that that former Duke employee of 29 years will be subpoenaed? And again, that's not to indicate that Governor McCrory has done anything illegal, but just in terms of gathering all the information as part of this federal investigation, are federal prosecutors interested to the point in finding out how much, you know, stock holdings the governor does have? Because we do know, based on a statement of economic interest, that he has at least $10,000 of Duke stock. What we don't know, and he legally does not have to share this. He was asked on the campaign trail, and he has been asked many times. He doesn't have to share how much more than $10,000 it is. So is it $11,000 or is it in the six or seven figures? And is that a factor in this whole thing? And again, just as part of the investigation, it seems conceivable that that could be a step in this point moving
forward.
They
may want to ask and find out. Speaking of shareholders, only about 30 seconds left, but they've asked for an independent investigation, right?
They have. A group of 20 large institutional investors, we're talking about state pensions from Oregon, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, and Duke Energy has 620 million shares. Some of these groups have many shares. The Oregon group has 28 million shares. And basically what they're asking for at the May 1st shareholders meeting is a report on, you know, what happened, was it preventable, addressing some of these claims over groundwater contamination and what Duke plans to do moving forward. Duke stock price has remained pretty steady at about $70 since this whole thing started. So we'll see.
All right, Jeff, thanks very much.
Thanks, Frank.
Jeff Tiberi is WUNC's Greensboro Bureau Chief. He continues to cover the coal ash story as well. Just ahead, a full-frame film looks at the anti-apartheid movement and an activist who found soft vengeance. Stay with us on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.